It is 18 past the hour on the TJMS. Roland Martin joins us now. Good morning, Roland. How are you?
Folks, good morning here in Houston, hanging out with the family. Also, yesterday, I want to thank all these folks, man, who caught my video, the end video with the white supremacist, white nationalist Richard Spencer. It was quite interesting, Sybil, listening to this guy talking about how rough it's been for white people.
I know.
How they're just not getting these jobs. And I'm going, right.
Good job on that, Roland.
But again, what you're looking at here, you're looking at the folks who are afraid to compete, and they don't like the demographic changes happening in this country. And speaking of those demographic changes, that is also what is causing Democrats great consternation after losing, of course, the presidency to Donald Trump. And Bernie Sanders has been quite vocal about this. But what he's also saying, though, it is quite problematic, Sybil and Jay and Skip, because it brings to question his own blind spot when it comes to race. Joining me right now is journalist Terrell Starr. Terrell, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing well, sir. Thanks for bringing me on.
So here's the deal. So look, all week Bernie Sanders has been talking about what needs to be done in the Democratic Party when it comes to change. And the other day he said, look, you can't just be about, I'm a woman, vote for me. Well, first of all, we understand that, we concur. But here's what's interesting. Last night, he wrote a piece on Medium.com, and he was also tweeting his thoughts as well. And he said this point about you can't just, we need diverse candidates, but we got to focus on the working class. It caught my attention because he acts as if black people are not in the working class. Latinos are not in the working class. And working class is now being used as a code word to really only mean the white working class. Your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. And so let me get you back to a woman by the name of Felicia Perry back in February who specifically said, I know you're scared to say black. I know you're scared every time we say reparations, but it seems like every time you try to talk to black people, you try not to essentially say black people. And she went into this conversation about what it was like growing up on the west side of Minneapolis. And he shot back against her really in a very, I thought was a really disrespectful tone. And he essentially said, well, first of all, in my speech, I said black side 50 times. Is that enough for you? And he basically, at that point in my mind, lost the most important voters that he would need, which are black women. And I've been covering Bernie Sanders for more than a year. I've covered his rallies. And one of the things that I found consistently was that he and his senior staff did not feel that they could get, that they did not need black voters and black support. And many of his black staff have told me that. And what's really troubling as a result of last night in this Medium essay is that he still thinks that the progressive movement is going to take over the DNC without black support, particularly black female support. So it just seems like he's someone who refuses to learn. But basically right now, you know that Keith Ellison is the leading candidate to take over the DNC. You know, there's a competition for the seat and all. But what I think is going to happen is that unless, and you know Keith Ellison is a progressive movement of the Democratic Party. If he is not able to have a conversation with white progressives about their language, his black face is not going to make a difference.
So where do we take this, though? Where do we, if we have all of this and they're not taking us seriously, what's our answer?
I'm not really sure what it is at this moment because, you know, the thing is, even for me, I was a bit surprised when Bernie Sanders got as much traction as he did, to be quite honest with you. Because the thing is that, and what I thought was going to happen was that he was going to use his political revolution and that language and really adjust it and calibrate it to black people. But he didn't. So going back to your question, you know, it really depends on the future of the white progressive movement and their ability to correct the mistakes of Bernie Sanders. Because when we think about progressive, we think about Bernie Sanders. When we think about the future of progressives, in my mind, you think about Keith Allison, that he's the easiest person to pin to the top of that position. He's African American man. He's Muslim, you know, from Indianapolis. So he has a wide range of intersectional elements to where he can bridge some of those divides. He's going to have to lead the healing. And it's because right now we are thinking about the white middle class voter, right? Again, going back to Martin's point, we don't act like black people are middle class workers. And so in addition to white people supposedly feeling like they have been left out, if you want to kind of believe and go into this sympathy jargon with them, the reality is that black people feel hurt by this as well in the Democratic primary, and they're not going to have Hillary Clinton to blame in 2018 and 2020. But if Keith Allison or whoever takes over the DNC does not address this issue, they're going to run into a very similar problem with whatever candidates that they try to push at the local level or at the national level.
But here's the other thing, I think it's the Sybil's point. I think when you ask, you know, what do we do? I think what it requires us to openly call out and challenge those white progressives, and not say, well, no, let's have this private conversation where it's not public. No, I mean, he has to be called out on it. I mean, Ashley Yates, one of the Black Lives Matter activists, last night called Sanders out on his language. Joan Walsh, also with The Nation, called him out as well. And so it requires that. And I think, again, this is where black folks look. The midterm election, Terrell, is in 2 years. This is where black folks literally put them on blast, saying, no, we're not going to have the quiet, nice conversation. We're going to have it openly, and you're going to have to confront this, because otherwise what's going to happen is they're going to play this game of chasing this white working class voter and ignore the very working class people who really are right now the backbone of the party, and that is African-Americans, Latinos, and young voters.
But you know what's so ironic about that, though? I totally agree with you, but what's troubling for me is that if white progressives don't get that it's Latinos and black folk who are their most important voting bloc in the party, you can't get past a primary of any kind without black people, particularly black women. If he can't break down that economic dynamic with us, I'm really puzzled at whether or not this conversation is going to take place at all, because during my reporting and even afterwards, people seem to be extremely unwilling, because we want to focus on how terrible and deplorable Donald Trump supporters are, that many people tend to believe that if you're progressive, you can't be racist, or you can't say anything that's prejudiced, or you can't say anything that's racially insensitive, because that blow and that burden goes to people who vote for Donald Trump. And so asking them to look at themselves and to be reflective is a new emotional labor that I'm wondering if they have the capacity to undertake.
All right, Terrell Starr, we appreciate it. Now you were with Fusion. You're out there looking for your next reporting gig. Hey,
sir.
This is a brother, Sybil, a expert in Russia. Hey, somebody sign the brother up.
I love your work. Really good job.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Thank you all for bringing me on.
All right. Enjoy
Happy Thanksgiving,
Roland.
All right, y'all have a great Thanksgiving. And if a Trump supporter starts talking at the dinner table, uh-oh.
Watch out there now.
I feel you, bro. We'll holler, man.